ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's freaking gorgeous down here, isn't it? And everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb due to Fukushima radiation so they can help the economy. A very special guest today, and we will be joined in the second hour by another guest as well, is James Wright, formerly of the formerly a servant to the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite in Dallas, who is now working for the EU as a kind of a diplomat and is also an author and leading kind of an investigation to get, well, Freemasonry itself out of politics, which I think would be quite an interesting thing. James, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be back. How have you been?
Oh, mate, you know, it's been all go six ways from Sunday, quite right. Literally.
I hear that. I've moved again and crazy. Just now settled in, though, and I'm back down in Texas, but this time deep South Texas, and it's absolutely gorgeous, tropical paradise, natural springs to swim in. I'm very blessed at the moment, despite the circumstances. So,
well, yeah, I mean the circumstances themselves. But again, I want to talk about the mentality behind all of this, because you have a look at secrecy, and in everyday life, secrecy and privacy, there's nothing inherently wrong with it, right? Because, you know, there's certain embarrassing details about people's lives that maybe they don't want everybody to know about. And you know, it's perfectly fine. People get to keep themselves, do their private lives. They're not hurting nobody or anything like that. But when it comes to secrecy in terms of organizations, and it's not just an individual anymore, is there something inherently wrong with that, depending on the organization?
Well, I mean, you can look at it two ways, I suppose. I mean, if you're a company on top of your game with whatever your product or service is, obviously you don't want leaks coming out to your competition that might leak, you know, the next up-and-coming product that's going to make you hundreds of millions of dollars. Of course not. But, you know, when it comes to the world of esotericism and these secret societies, which are, let's face it, religions, let's call a spade, it has a very negative connotation, and that so easily and so frequently gets taken over to the dark side. And, you know, when you scratch the surface, you've got a lot of good guys. Your around-the-corner neighborhood Blue Lodge types, they're very upstanding gentlemen, most of them. Problem is with those Blue Lodges is you have these Scottish Rite characters hanging around to the sides, you know, calling the shots, and that's where you start to get into this realm of dubiousness, and from that follows other daunting negative things, as you well know. So,
well, and again, the point I'm trying to make here is about the psychological stasis, essentially, that would draw somebody into these types of orders and indeed believe that they are doing the right thing. Have you ever met anybody who's gotten into Freemasonry, believed that they were doing the right thing and found it was something different? Or for the majority of Masons, they never get terribly high anyway. Vast majority just maintain at lower levels, and they simply go there to escape their wives. From what I hear about it, it's kind of just more like a dying old boys club.
The baby boomer and World War II generations went for more of the escape and the boys club. Everybody in my age group was there to further their education in metaphysics and philosophy. And they were sort of brutally rebuffed. And as a result, you know, 9 out of 10 threw their hands up and walked out the door and said, that's it, I'm done. that other remaining one of the group usually rose to at least an intermediary point in the road to where they could see some of the more sinister and sick aspects to the upper management of the craft, and that's why they walked away. So, and then everybody that I directly went through with, my peers in person from my Blue Lodge and my Scottish Rite Valley both, we all fit into that category of sort of like, you know, we saw too much and no more, please, thank you. So, of course, now I only reached that conclusion, of course, after everything came to a head, as it were, and there was a big blowout, fallout following that, and they conducted, you know, a sort of a witch hunt, and it was basically to purge the place of a lot of the men whose positions were very highly coveted, I should say, which I believe to this day that the only reason I ever found myself in the position I was in, which was fairly exalted, not the most you can get, but certainly more than any one Mason ever aspires to. And there was a lot of jealousy and, you know, so on and so forth, like high school, a real high school type atmosphere and attitude and infighting, backstabbing, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that combined with the ritual, what I believe to be misguidings and the sinister occultic overtones, etc., you know, it just made it completely unbearable. And factoring in as bizarre of a situation as I came from, where, you know, I came from a very deeply rooted Masonic family who sort of groomed me for that role, that made it quadruple the issue for me in my personal life when everything fell apart. So that's, I guess, all in for all these reasons why I feel so passionately about what I do now.
Well, it's like when you lose your current view of the world because of reality breaking it into 1,000 pieces.
Yes.
You're left picking up those pieces and trying to stitch them together, kind of thing, to say, how do I look at the world now? It's like it's like a broken mirror, and there's all these reflections of who you were, who you thought you would be, and suddenly they reflect a different image, and you kind of have to, it's like you're looking in the mirror and you've got a different face, like on Quantum Leap or something like that, and you don't know who you are anymore, and you've got to somehow figure out what situation you're actually really in now. What time am I in? What skills do I have? What person am I? Who are my people around me, you know? And I think it's like you only come to those really harsh realizations, as I mentioned on the Dark Occult of Mysticism show that we did earlier, through trauma. I've had this idea for a while, and I would never do it because it's amoral. But truth or false flags? Okay, what if a bunch of truthers dressed up in stormtrooper outfits or impersonated a SWAT team or something, and SWAT teamed a bunch of other people who they wanted to wake up? You know, all of a sudden you've got a SWAT team coming through your frickin' front door. You suddenly don't care that they're only doing it for your safety. You suddenly realize that you don't feel safe at all.
Well, yes, and there is a very strong and precise science to all that. You know, like we talked about in the Dark Occult and Mysticism show previously, Frater brought up an excellent point, which I can confirm with my own evidence, you know, from the things I possess, that places like SRI and these other think tanks and so forth have perfected this to where sort of what you hear, really the David Icke argument is the best I've heard yet without possessing all of the proper evidence, just mainly eyewitness accounts. But it begins with trauma, absolutely. And then once they've done that, they begin to compartmentalize the mind. And I certainly went through that when I worked on the Supreme Council. You know, they used to tell me, like, if it was an ordinary day in that building and I was just doing routine tasks and didn't have any important meetings and, you know, whatever, I could get away with maybe a crummy T-shirt and some shorts or some jeans, or what have you, and all that. But, you know, I had an office there with a private closet, private bathroom, so I had a change of clothes so I could be ready for anything at any time. And, you know, my boss would come in and tell me, okay, I need you to be James now. And that was code for, you know, be on your A game, get dressed up to the nines, suit, tie, all that. And, you know, you have a show to put on and business to discuss. And then he would equally come back and say, okay, you can be Jay now, which meant casual, back to my, you know, runabout duties and errands and so forth. And that's what they do. They compartmentalize you and they get you to try to get you to where they can just say something and then you go into that mode and you're basically an obedient slave, you know. And for a long time, I went along with it. I was conscious of what they were doing, but, you know, I had that young ambition and wanted to succeed, and so I went ahead and did it, and it wasn't until it got way too abusive and intolerable that, you know, that was it. That's all she wrote. So
it seems like they must be incredibly adept at mind control and in cult indoctrination, and this goes for, say, boot camp in the military, medical school.
They perfected it into a fine art over hundreds of years.
Mm. So. And the main methodology of which being that they will take your current perceived reality, tell you that it doesn't really exist, and provide a whole new one for you, and then demand that you be grateful that they gave you this new reality and demand obedience over it. And in so doing, they give access to your wealth, sex, and power, which is ultimately what people who run brainwashing and indoctrination missions in life really desire above all.
And you also just unwittingly described going through all of the 32 Masonic degrees.
Well, see, it's not unwitting because it's as above, so below.
Right.
Fractal. The fractal holographic universe, or as I like to call the conspiracy side of the fractal holographic universe, fractal scumbaggery universe, where you look into a scumbag or some incidents of scumbaggery, and all of a sudden you see the pattern repeating itself all the way back through history, but also connecting all the way sideways till it becomes a 360-degree Googleplex of scumbaggery that to which there is no end. There is no end of the scumbaggery rabbit hole, in my opinion. But the thing is just recognizing the patterns and understanding that getting lost down any rabbit hole and losing yourself is a dangerous thing. And don't give yourself up to anybody else.
Well, and you always know when they're up to it because all you have to do is follow the trails of symbols and numerology. That's very real, and they are obsessed with it, as people have said about them. That's absolutely the truth. I studied that when I was on the Scottish Rite Research Society, and a good example that I like to make in regard to that was the events surrounding the car crash of Princess Diana, you know, riddled with symbology. And you look to something like that, and there's your answer. You know exactly what you can break it down and figure out what numbers mean what and what points mean what and where are they geographically, and everything factors in. It's all what they call sacred geometry and Solomonic magic and so forth. And it's their signature is always all over it. So that's how you follow these people. And then they hide in plain sight, you know. This Illuminati business, they're right across the street from the White House in the Supreme Council. Southern jurisdiction, Scottish Rite. Somebody I was on another show the other day, and somebody, a caller, made a comment about, you know, or was asking a question rather about Skull and Bones. So, well, yeah, of course, but think about this. That's just one fraternity at Yale University. We're talking about the premier global power broker network, the one of the planet. And they are able to call on anyone they wish, be it a exterminator to a plumber to a lawyer to a judge to a member of parliament in a country. I mean, it just, there, it knows no boundaries. So it's important for me to try and get that message out.
Well, yeah, look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. If you see something wrong and you don't do the opposite, you're doing something wrong. Just like if you see that the El Presidente B and El Presidente A are the same freaking guy. And if you vote for him, you may as well be declaring foreign wars illegally yourself. We'll be right back.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government
leave. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Currently have people from all over the world tuning in for a number of different countries. Welcome. Good morning. Oh, wait, and just like, what was it, Jim Carrey said in The Truman Show, in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Now, my very special guest, James Wright, coming at us live from an undisclosed, undiscoverable Freemason panic room bunker.
what's your line about this having a sense of humor? Sorry, carry on.
No. I was just trying to get you to laugh, and I've already achieved it.
Wait, no, okay, I'll one-up you. Hold on, let me push this button and see if you can hear it.
Nope. Oh, no, I can barely hear it, man. You'd have to hold it right up to the the microphone if you wanted us to hear it. Put it in the background, sort of.
I push a button now on my keychain, and this voice comes in from everywhere, and armed, stay.
Oh, so I don't get it. Armed, stay.
Stay your posterior behind. I guess I don't know. It's brand new. I don't understand it. That's why they gave me a remote. You know.
All right. Well, moving on to something that actually does kind of make sense to both of us. Scumbaggery. Right now, I was just thinking about this kind of recruitment arm. How exactly is there a particular methodology? Who are they looking for when they're going out recruiting for a 33rd degree or any other form of scumbaggery that you might have specialist knowledge of?
Oh, goodness gracious. I wish you would have asked me that during the break, because I could have dug out. I have a copy of their PR playbook. Which, now, their official stance worldwide is, we do not recruit. Their slogan is, to be one, ask one, right? Well, no, they recruit, and we'll just get past that lie right now. They target, when I was on board, they were targeting, and I'm assuming that has not changed. Usually, right now, guys about approximately 20 to 35 who have usually like a grandfather linkage or perhaps an uncle linkage to the craft. And, you know, they go after them and sort of paint a picture that, you know, this can really help them as a young adult get established in the community and the business community and do some really great networking and so on and so forth. Well, what they don't seem to be able to understand in their infinite wisdom is these guys are coming in because they want and crave to have mentors who can help educate them, help point them in the right directions of the metaphysical, the esoteric, the philosophical, etc. And there's a lot to be said for life experience in that form. I'm a proponent of it, at least, and I enjoyed that component of that. But they're being turned away. You know, the Supreme Council is more and more purging their public image of having any ties to the occult because of the image that's always sort of tainted them as a result of that. And so, like, just last year, they came out with the new version of Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike. They haven't come out with one in about 50, 60 years now. And this one, though, is abridged. So they've cut out all those references to Lucifer and Moloch and all that sort of thing to make it look like it's just more of a political speech or, you know, a morality speech or what have you. And so they, I mean, they basically cut 500 pages out. It's pretty staggering. And I'm not saying I'm defending Albert Pike. Matter of fact, it's my personal belief that Morals and Dogma, the original version, was direct plagiarism of Dogma et Ritual de la Haute Magie. I may have just messed up my French there, but by Eliphas Levi. And it's exactly the same. That's where you get the original idea of, like, Baphomet, for example. So a lot of these other appendant orders obviously stem from that. And there's this push to go back to sort of a mentality like, again, Albert Pike wrote, how Masonry conceals its secrets from all but the adepts or elect. And they really want to get back to that system of exclusivity, only having a certain elect, prodigal sons, you know, next in line for those precious chairs once the elder faction kicks the bucket. So
seems like monarchical hierarchy to carry on their message. So it's kind of like I'm the king and I write the Magna Carta and I want everybody to abide by the Magna Carta. So I appoint this person here to be my successor, or Kim Jong-il, you know? I mean, Yes. What we're talking about is, could you say that Freemasonry and its ascension process up the ranks is not entirely dissimilar from the way Kim Jong-il appoints his successor?
That is an excellent analogy. Absolutely.
Well, okay. Well, in that case, if they're doing that, and it's similar with this person's methodology, then is the tyranny that they're concocting of similar proportions to their ascension protocols? If you're trying to carry on a message and pass it down through generations or whatever, you've got to somehow maintain a coercive process to ensure that a course is not deviated. How do they ensure that the course is not deviated? That the agenda continues in a straight line. And what is that agenda?
Okay, well, as far as ensuring, that goes back to, like we were talking about, with the psychological constraints, you know, and these guys are largely so fearful of their masters, so to speak, that, you know, the mere thought of, because like in those Masonic charges against me, one of the charges therein is me criticizing Masonry internally. Never mind all the rest of the charges and writing a book and speaking publicly against them and everything else. They're also upset that I had anything bad to say, period, even in the proper behind closed doors context. So that's how adamant they are that they don't want to hear anything about themselves. And then, sorry, I got off on that tangent. What was the second part? It was a two-parter.
Well, the first part is, what's this? How did they ensure that only one person gets put in those positions to make those decisions? And how are the people around that person who's now in this new position of power kept in line so that they don't deviate from the original agenda?
Right, okay, so kept in line with the constraints. And then to ensure, I mean, good old-fashioned nepotism, you know? I mean, my grandfather did it. I was groomed for the exact same role. Had everything gone as planned, I'm sure I would have been either the next secretary general or something very much like it. Probably eventually found my way to Washington, D.C. to set up residence. You know, maybe even one day speak on the History Channel for one of those blurbs on a program. But, you know, it comes at such a high cost, people don't realize. And Masons don't realize what they're supporting up top. And that's a very, very corrupt system that does seek to dominate. And back to the Albert, I was trying to tie in Albert Pike. So the most daunting thing in my mind that we are facing right now as we speak is, I know, Vinny, you're familiar with the letter Albert Pike and Three World Wars. Well, when he wrote that document in 1871, lo and behold, World War One and Two ended up coming off exactly as he said they would. Now, I mean, with the geopolitical atmosphere we're experiencing at the moment, it would appear that we're not far off from the way he spelled out number three, which was getting Islam and Christianity to basically mutually annihilate each other, throw atheists into the mix as well, and demonize them, and just sort of wipe everything out all at once, and start with a clean slate with this one world religion, which would be Freemasonry. And that's when they would finally, if that all were to take place, that is when they would finally exit the closet and say, oh yeah, by the way, it's a religion, you know. But so long as I'm alive and breathing, I'll do whatever I can to see that day from coming. Absolutely not. No. That's everyone's worst nightmare come true in this conspiracy realm of factoids and sometimes not. You know, it's all hidden right in plain sight. And it seems like the more I do this and the more momentum this thing is gathering, the more dangerous it gets for me. But, you know, hey, if that's the price I have to pay, then it's well worth it. Because the world we're leaving to the next generation is in a sad, sad state. It's certainly not the one you and I are the same age. The world is not the one we grew up in. It's changed that much that fast. And it's just, in my opinion, going downhill. So, and it starts with this. It starts with these secret societies and their backhandedness, their control over political systems. Cut off the head of the snake, body dies.
So we're talking about Freemasonry as kind of the head of the snake, or rather, it's one of the big recruiting arms. And what I've found is there's an eclectic mix of secret societies where there's kind of like dual membership, kind of like a dual passport. I'm not only a 33rd degree Freemason, I'm also on the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm not only on the Council on Foreign Relations, I'm also on the Trilateral Commission. I'm not only on the Trilateral Commission, I've been to a Bilderberg group meeting, and so on and so forth. So there's these secret control apparatus that are all kind of interlinked and interwoven in many strange and mysterious ways. In so doing, you can't look at any one secret society in isolation, can you?
No, and that's where the most, pardon me, real definition of the Illuminati comes into factor is it's an umbrella sphere grouping of these orders. Now, the Scottish Rite is at the top, and that's what I try to get across. You have all the rest of them, obviously, but yes, we used to, when I worked there, we used to have a term for those types who sort of pass between multiple organizations. We called them card collectors, as in like a cartoon where a character opens his wallet and the xylophone of, you know, business card holders falls out to the floor and rolls and all that, meaning dues cards to all these different bodies, orders, etc. And there's people like that, like Frater X, you know, talks about his five types of Masons, and that's one of the types, is that one that, you know, they're in it basically for how many certificates can I get on the wall of my office, you know, which in my opinion is for the wrong reason, but that's just my opinion. So,
well, I think that also what people have difficulty recognizing is that if you've got somebody who's directly in front of you and says this is the way things are, if you don't verify who that person is, what their history is, what their background is, and who their associates are, you don't really know who you're dealing with at the end of the day. And if that person is in a fiduciary level of responsibility, an elder or a mentor or a leader of some description, the danger of not finding out who you're really taking your orders from is so paramount that I think that the very process of questioning authority at all has been specifically stamped out of people so they can continue doing everything that they're doing with absolute impunity.
Yes, that's their wet dream. They're extremely corruptible. They know no boundaries, because when you get inside the heads of people like this, all rules are off. They don't think like you and I think. There's no constraints. So anything is possible in a world like that in which they operate.
Well, constraint connotes morality. And what is morality often instilled into people through? Either through experience or indoctrination. So perhaps they're trying to indoctrinate you in their way to forget even your very own experiences so that they can control you.
Yes, well, I mean, back to the family tie-ins. So many of these guys come in because of family legacy, and so there's also that extra desire to please daddy or grandfather or whoever, and that also makes it all the more easy to control them as well.
And daddy, dude, I don't want to go against daddy. Hey, we got Stephanie calling in. I'm sorry, Stephanie, we're just coming to break, so we'll get to you right after this. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio 5 days a week. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no no, oh no no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom boom boom.
My heart goes boom boom boom. Like the underwear bomber. And they take him down to 13 stories below ground. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. I was recruited by the CIA and led onto a plane by a well-dressed man. And now I'm sitting in a jail cell deep underground in the military base, not me ever being able to escape my life. All I want to know is whose side are you on? The one with the ones with the needles, or the guy with the Coke can who's trying to buy my loyalty. My very special guest is James Wright, formerly of the Scottish Rite. Hey, wait, hey, hold on. You're the Scottish Rite, as in James Wright. I get it, yeah. But you're not Scottish, are you? It's not Scottish. And also, we've got our caller here, Stephanie, who's been holding on for some time now. Steph, welcome.
Hello, gentlemen, and thank you so much for taking my call. Vinny, I'm really excited to talk to you. Congratulations on your show and the revamping and how you accepted that with open arms. So it's a very exciting time. So thanks again. Anyways, I'm very intrigued about what we're talking about. I have so much to talk about, but I'll try to keep it brief. First of all, my grandfather was a Mason, and I believe that I possibly got engaged in some monarch stuff when I was a child. And as well, a very close family member of mine is about to join them. So how do you wake people up?
Well, like we said, trauma. So if you have pepper spray or a baton of some description, tell them, wake up! And just smash their head in. You know, they'll wake up.
Yeah, that would be great. But we all believe in peace, right?
Okay, well, in that case, just sabotage their careers and... Well, basically what you could do is you could badmouth them to the people that they trust behind their back and stuff like that, and get the people that they think they can trust to turn against them. Then when they screw them over, then they'll wake up. How's that?
Hey, that's a good plan.
Yeah.
You know, I think
Scottish Rite or something like that, you call up the lodge and you say, hey, look, this guy's been talking bad about the Masons. Just make up a whole lot of lies, essentially, and turn them against him. And they'll kick him out. And all of a sudden, you'll have your wish. Not only will they be out of the occult, dark occulted mysticism, but they'll also wake up and be against it. It's the truth of false flag, man.
I'll tell you, with this particular person, I've been trying for a long time, and they just, you know, it comes back to the fallacies. And they took the trivium out of schools in 1900. I've spoke about this on this channel before. I just, because of you and a couple other hosts, I've actually taken my child out of school. You guys have given me the courage to do it again. Because they're not teaching the fallacies. And that's the problem. That's why everybody is just rolling over like sheep, because they don't know how to recognize bad reasoning. Right? That's the problem. They do the logic first, and then the grammar, which is where, you know, the facts. And that's the problem. So I want to say to all your listeners, if you have kids in school and they have to be in school, get a book online called The Fallacy Detective. It's 38 easy lessons to learn how not to get screwed anymore, basically.
Well, and also Jan Irvin, that's spelled J-A-N-I-R-V-I-N, Jan Irvin, at GnosticMedia.com, has studied lectured extensively on the trivium and its practices. And so if you can't get the book, there's a free resource and archive for everybody to go out. So it's GnosticMedia.com, Jan Irvin. Stephanie, do you have anything else to say?
Well, I just want to say what's funny about the trivium is that Spellcheck recognizes autism and a certain, I won't name it, a beauty product line, but it won't recognize the trivium. So effectively, in 100 years, they've eradicated something that was around since Aristotle. Is that incredible?
Well, I don't know. As far as I recognize, there are a hell of a lot of things that have been around for 100 years that simply don't exist anymore.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like, anyway, for example, people who can think.
Yeah. Well, I'm raising two thinkers for sure. So I want to thank you again for giving me the bravery to say, you know, just stand up and say, no, I'm not having my child part of this anymore, you know?
Absolutely.
So thank you so much.
And this is a generational resistance. And Stephanie, I want to thank you for your call. And I have a great affinity for children. I'm so good with kids, bro. It's unbelievable. Kids freaking love me because I'm a giant. And I'm friendly, and I'm smiley, and I'm characterful, and playful, and colorful, and what have you. Kind of like a wheel.
Like a big kid?
Essentially. Kind of a Wurlitzer jukebox for kids. What I've found is that they have a lot of potential, okay? But every single day, it's like when you're born, you understand that your days are numbered. Kind of like if you start learning, you understand that every day you lose the learning potential of that day. And so many parents are just plopping the kid down in front of the TV, and you can see the children just totally mesmerized by it, kind of thing, with swaying back and forth. And it's like the New World Order wants to take control of our society by indoctrinating the next generation. I figure that if we want the next generation to live free, we have to indoctrinate them in the morality and the concepts of freedom and of course, the trivium and being able to detect BS, or Bolshevik, as I like to say. Again, you take whatever the methodology the enemy is using and you do the exact opposite. They want all your kids in state schools so that they can give you a really dumb, boring, pointless freaking education that won't get you employed at anything more important than freaking Walmart? No, thank you. No, thank you.
That's well put, Vinny. Very well put. Well, I'm excited, and my 10-year-old, he's already a truther and trying to tell his friends about the fluoride and GMOs and stuff, so that's great.
Yeah.
And then I get him into stuff, the Illuminati at home, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, a friend of mine, Ian Wishart, he wrote a book called Aircon about, climate change rhetoric and how they're trying to enslave everybody with the UN world government kind of thing. And his son was at school, and they were doing a class on how wonderful, on how loving, and how caring, and how altruistic the United Nations is. And he gets up in front of the class, and he says something to the effect of, well, the UN is actually a world government platform that is going to enslave us through carbon taxes and subsequently exterminate us, you know? And I said to Ian, you must have been going, that's my boy.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, it's actually just before I got my son out of school, he had a project. And it was saying, oh, the Canadian government wants to save these horses and blah, blah, blah. So what do you think that they're trying to do? And my son effectively then explained how they're probably just trying to distract people and make you think you can trust them and that they really care about about the animals and about the people in Canada. So that basically, and on and on and on. And the last thing he said is so that we can remain their slaves. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. But let's pull you out before you put that in, you know? Because I just thought, man, that's going to be red flag, you know. And I'm at this point, I'm just feeling like I shouldn't draw any attention to myself. If that makes any sense.
I'm 6'4". There ain't nothing I can hide from. All right, that's my perspective. And more to the point, I live in New Zealand, and we have the exact same New World Order here that you have in America. So not only am I too tall to hide, there's no place for me to hide, nor is there one for you or your children, Stephanie.
And when, you're right.
Okay, and you have an instinct. It's called fight or flight. When there is no more flight, there is only one option. And when we're talking about an intellectual battle, as we're doing now, countering brainwashing and countering propaganda, long protracted wars, if you're a soldier, can be intensely stressful and damaging to your personality as a whole. So you don't want to get into fights you can't win. So you've got to come up with a methodology where you can keep telling the truth, but you make sure that you tell it in a way that you can wind up coming out on top. And instead of everybody treating you like you're the man with three heads growing out of your neck, they treat you as the man with brains that they suddenly learn something off and admire and want to emulate and become more intelligent, more real, more visceral. Because I find that you can have infinite conversations about infinite garbage and you get infinitely nowhere. Because when you say something that's real, that people will listen to you, take it in, and respect you for it. And when you're in public school, everybody's so immature, they don't get it anyway. So, you know, if you don't start off in public school, hey, you're hitting the ground running. Rather than hitting the ground unconscious. Thank you very much, Stephanie, for your call.
And, thank you, Vinny.
And good luck with raising your brood. I know how difficult it can be for a lot of parents, and it's getting harder and harder every single frickin' day of the week to raise kids in this society. It's almost like through the power of taxation, you can destroy something, and it's like they're taxing parenthood in and of itself in a thousand different ways. It's like the it's like the Procreation Revenue Service or something like that, the PRS. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And Freighter X will be coming on, hopefully, if he's secured his brood himself. We'll be right back.
Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. Haven't got Freighter X, but we still have James Wright. And I'd like to take some callers as well from people. The number is 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525, if you've had a Masonic experience. And Masonic experience. It sounds like some kind of like a Beatles album or something like that, like the Magical Mystery Tour and the Inside, you know, secret album or something, the Masonic influence. But and this is something I also get from Freighter as well, is that Masonic imagery actually does have an effect, kind of like a subliminal imagery does have a residual effect on the mind. And apparently, according to him, it's been consciously inserted into media of all formats. And I'm a big Seth MacFarlane fan, like Cleveland Show and Family Guy, that kind of thing. And I swear to you, every single episode I have seen in every single season, there is a Masonic floor somewhere or a pyramid somewhere else. Or something like that, or an all-seeing eye in the background. You know, there was a scene with Brian Griffin going to reach for a Richard Dawkins book, and he winds up meeting this girl there, and right behind him, right in the shot, purposely put there is a little all-seeing eye on one of the spines of the books that's actually in the center of the frame, where these two are interacting, talking about atheism, and coming together on that regard. You know, and I can't help but thinking there's an intention behind it, and apparently there is. So they love to influence you in all little ways that you don't really recognize. Okay, like they've built your society. You have a look at pillars, for example. James, can you explain what an obelisk means in Freemasonic dark occulted mysticism?
Solar phallic worship, to put it bluntly.
Right. Now, anybody who's living in Auckland, New Zealand, sees this giant phallic object called the Sky Tower right in the centre of the city. And not too far away from it is a suburb called One Tree Hill. In the middle of One Tree Hill, there is a giant Masonic pillar on the very top of that hill that is 33 metres tall on a tract of land that is 330 acres. So it's 33, 33, and then you've got the Masonic phallus, right? And I heard, and maybe you could corroborate this for me, James, that it's actually a kind of way of channeling energy from Lucifer down to the ground, like Lucifer meaning light and sun worship, kind of channeling it down. Is that how it is, or have I got this wrong?
Absolutely. The Supreme Council where I worked, from the street downtown, you walked up 7 steps, then 5, then 3, which are the prime numbers in masonry and sacred geometry. Then once you were in the main foyer of the building, it was 33 steps up to the next floor on the grand staircase. In the grand ballroom, you had 72 crystal chandeliers, 72 being the number of goetic demons. So to say that they take that stuff seriously is an understatement.
So, and again, going back to the New Zealand example, I've driven much of the length of the country and gone through many small towns. And in almost every single town, there is a little spire in the center. That might be a clock tower, or it might simply be a monument, but sure enough, they're all there. And you go through graveyards in New Zealand, and you see these big Masonic monuments that are sticking right out as gravestones. And you see all the other ones that are kind of low to the ground and rounded, as you would see a traditional gravestone. And so we're surrounded by this imagery, absolutely surrounded by it. It has a intent to influence us, at least. Is that the case? What do they believe that channeling these energies actually accomplishes?
Well, that belief has changed, historically speaking. I mean, going back to Samaria, Babylon, et cetera, you know, they believed it channeled this or that, or ley lines, or the pyramids having been antenna themselves, at least according to the Rosicrucians. Nowadays, it's more like what they call the Dan Brown effect. When the Dan Brown novels and movies first came out, the Supreme Council was very upset. They did not like, they felt that it was going to cast a negative light on Masonry as a whole and so on. But then they saw the overwhelming response and interest that the public had to this, and they sort of rethought their attitude and decided, wait a minute, this is actually helping us, not hurting us, so they sort of ran with it, and that's now why I believe, you know, you have a lot of celebrities doing a lot of the hand signs and things like that. It's all sort of an unexpected gift of conditioning that fell into their lap. And so they're treating it as a gift and running with it. Absolutely they are.
Well, what is this gift? I mean, is it like
making these symbols and words and phrases and everything else, household recognizable terminologies?
Well, this another thing. I think one of my listeners told me about this. Some guy, Naba Shibaya. Some dude came up with this phrase, Naba Shibaya, or something like that. And he says that if you say those words 10 times when you get up in the morning, it suddenly fills you with kind of energy, like it's some old magic word or something like that that activates your body.
Shivaya is a Swami incantation, yes.
And what does it mean and what does it do? Because there's two worlds, the physical and the metaphysical. And there may be more, but these are the ones that of which I've become acutely aware, at least. So I understand, of course, that there's a bit of crossover. So sometimes the metaphysical and the physical worlds are not strictly separate, and they in turn kind of bring things into other elements. Like somebody could be sitting there. I don't know if you've ever played a game called Diablo, where you could be either a warrior or a wizard or a bow warrior or something of that nature.
And you notice that. I think the word you're looking for is the occult word, what they call the crossroads.
A bridge between the worlds.
Yes.
Or in the movie Constantine, he that was water that he would use to travel to hell and turn himself into a conduit. And you see these concepts and imagery being perpetrated all throughout our society. So I was just wondering, is it that they are attempting to use the metaphysical to control the physical, rather than allow them to coexist?
That would be their goal. I mean, after all, George Washington, everybody reveres him as such a wonderful man. I'm not going to sit here and say he wasn't, but you look at the ceiling of the United States Senate building, and the artwork depicted up there is titled The Apotheosis of George Washington. So he commissioned it. And, you know, it's pretty evident that he thought of himself as a god, or rather having achieved, at the very minimum, a demigod status, you know, because of not only just being president, but his extremely high ranking in the Masonic order and, you know, so on and so forth. So, they have a tradition of thinking very highly of themselves. Yes.
And I've always said for a long time, when somebody gets too full of themselves, they get too far ahead of themselves. Is there incidences where people who have delved so deeply into the occult, so deeply into the metaphysical, that they lost their frame of reference, that they went mad from it?
Oh, the most direct example of that I witnessed was when the fallout at the Scottish Rite occurred. I mean, here we had the so-called pillars of the community who were, if not my boss or my other sort of boss or the people on the executive board and et cetera on the Supreme Council, these elder men, highly educated, highly dignified, refined, et cetera, behaving like absolute petty, jealous, cutthroat teenagers. It was just mind-blowing to see the levels of stupidity and immaturity and all that in this caliber of gentleman. It was something I've never seen before, that's for sure.
Now, I've had experiences like this as well with people who I will be telling real facts, you know, that I've got evidence to back up for. And they'll say things like, oh, it's all fate, or the spirits will save me, or we're being protected by the angels, or something of that nature. And they ignore the real physical reality that I'm talking to them about. I don't ignore the other possible metaphysical ramifications. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like if you're in touch with them up there, you suddenly forget that you're also in touch with me right here, bro. You know, it's like you've got to multitask, and some people don't like multitasking. They choose to believe that one overrides the other. And as a direct result, they become very rudderless. And they kind of, their mental state begins to degrade, because it's like living in a delusional realm, essentially, where everything that you see is in direct contravention of your belief structure. And in so doing, you are, instead of accepting the fact that you're wrong, at least in some cases, you instead repeat and scream louder the wrong things in order to block out the things that are actually really there, that are really physical.
Yes, I saw it all the time. I mean, these guys would start to get their paintings or busts, bronze, plaques up on rooms to buildings and that sort of thing, and then, you know, that's when their attitude would certainly deteriorate. And one of the ones I came to blows with the hardest, who treated me extremely deplorably, when he was questioned about it from some of his colleagues, his response was, and I quote, "I don't make mistakes." Really? So you're comparing yourself to God? I mean, that was staggering to me. But he sincerely believed it. So it's very sad.
Well, that's the madness, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think it's like power doesn't corrupt you per se. Power simply drives you insane and causes you to lose touch. That's what it really is in a lot of ways.
That's putting it nicely, but yes, correct.
Yeah, and the insanity and the thoughtlessness usually manifests as scumbaggery. You know, it's just a natural progression. So let's talk about a deeper spiritual meaning here. We talk about churches, we talk about religious organizations, we talk about secret societies, and there's some sort of spiritual belief there. So I think that's a conclusion I'm suddenly reaching now, is that they really are trying to control the spirit world so that nobody else can really have access to it to a great degree, in essence, so that they can use their knowledge of the spirit world to affect the physical. But it doesn't work that way. It's kind of like a parallel dimensions and stuff like that. One does not override the other. There's a symbiotic relationship with it.
Well,
that's the disconnection. That's what drives the insanity, is that your world is suddenly no longer solid, and you think that the fluidity of it is real when it's not. And this goes for those in the higher levels of deep occult research or politics, just as much as it does for the general public sitting there watching a sitcom or a soap opera trying to live their lives through the characters. It's not real. So we've got a whole, and this goes back to what David Icke was saying about the Gnostics writing about archontic entities, how they can create false realities and make other people kind of react to them or live in them, sort of thing.
Yes. Well, I was thinking about something else there, but now, yeah, David Icke, I mean, yes, that's very true. And I suppose one of the biggest paradigms that has to shift with all this is that waking up to that and being able to spot it for what it is, because so many people just walk right by these people and don't realize how dubious they are, and yet it's going on all around us. Their influence is the most far-reaching, pervasive, penetrative methodology I've ever seen in my life from a strategic standpoint. You know, it's going to take a lot. I'm just one guy. I can't, you know, single-handedly take them down myself. There has to be a much larger call for transparency on all this. So in that aspect, I agree with David Icke 100%. And yes, false realities, absolutely, they're experts at it. That's what the whole esoteric arts are about. I mean, you could say right now, the way that I've chosen to sort of hide myself out, I'm being a magician, in effect, because I'm appearing to be in two different places at once, you know, to throw them off. So they have very real applications to everyday life. But they love that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about those real applications, because again, I think it's like, you're trying to drive a wedge. Like, reality is a door, and the metaphysical is a door frame. And essentially what they're trying to do is drive a wedge in there so that they can get through your door, past your defenses. We'll be right back. About Freemasonic insiders, namely the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, and James made a comment. Us doing the show might tick him off. I was like, John Key ain't going to listen to the show. But then again, my friend Penny Bright knows that talk radio in New Zealand, at least on all the mainstream networks, is analysed, and whenever a particular politician's name is mentioned, it gets recorded, transcribed, and then delivered to said politician if they want to read it, sort of thing. Like they get transcripts of what the media is talking about in regards to them. So maybe, and I would love for this to happen, John Key suddenly starts listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show and realizes that we know who he really works for. All right, like you have a look at three websites. Okay.
The National Party website, the current governing party, got John Key on the front. Freemasons New Zealand got John Key on the front. The New Zealand Zionist Society got John Key on the front. Okay? He's on the home pages of those three organizations. And he's the prime minister of a country. And he used to work for frickin' Wall Street. Okay? And you can go to the Federal Reserve New York website as well, and you can have a look at past employees, and you'll find right there John Key. So you've got these simultaneous roles that are being played. And as we mentioned before about secret societies and organizations and the apparatus of the New World Order, you have these business card kind of Rolodex people who can just flip open their wallet and like a cartoon, all the cards will unfold and roll out to the other end of the floor. Simultaneous membership, right? You wonder what other things he belongs to as well that we haven't found out yet. Because I didn't know that he was a Freemason or a New Zealand Zionist Society member or a Federal Reserve banker until maybe a couple of years back, sort of thing. And he's been in control of the country for like five. We don't know who the heck we're voting for anymore, do we? We don't know where their loyalties lie. That's the problem. These people, because they have a private life in a public space, using your money to do stuff, the fact that they have privacy at all, I think is kind of offensive because they pass legislation that violates ours. Patriot Act and what have you. It's the same freaking deal. We've got the search and surveillance bill over here. And internationally, what is the role of Freemasonry? Ultimately, I mean, we've talked about the fact that most Masons are not really in on it. We've talked about the fact that they do recruit high-level and influential people. We've talked about how they insert their symbols, not only physically into your cities, but also metaphysically into your television and your viewing materials in order to connote certain things. So that's the role in the United States, at least. And I would act under the assumption that as above, so below, as in the Northern Hemisphere, as in the Southern Hemisphere, the exact same operations are going on here anyway. Don't you think?
I would wholeheartedly agree. I've never been too familiar with the mechanics of Freemasonry in Aussie, but I have know from things I've heard directly from South America that, you know, down there they take it so seriously that old men will maybe only be at their 14th or 18th degrees out of 32. And we would get tour groups into the Dallas Scottish Rite, and these old-timers would absolutely be, you know, taken aback that they were in the presence of all these young guys who were 32nd degrees and beyond. They just couldn't understand it. Well, the reason why is because here in the States, they've turned it into a mass assembly line. You know, they're so hard up for manpower and volunteer work and everything else to make themselves look good as they're conditioned to doing externally, that they'll do anything now, much like the Mystic Shrine, for example. It used to be that you had to be a Master Mason, a 32nd degree Scottish Rite, and a Royal Arch Knight Templar York Rite to be eligible to join the shrine. Now they've done away with that because it was dying, and they've said, okay, now you just have to be a Master Mason, case closed. So, and they're even waiving the dues to join and, you know, membership application and et cetera, et cetera. So it goes to show the decline that it's in overall, because the York Rite is almost itself to that point now. So, because the Scottish Rite, make no mistake, dominates the block and has for 100 years.
So let's think about that for a second. What did Freemasonry used to do for people that was so good that attracted them to it, that has since been corrupted and simply being used to control and manipulate?
Well, you have to understand, once upon a time, when people sat around the dinner table at night and talked about what are we going to do this evening, there was no such thing as go see a movie or go out for a drive or this, that, the other. So lodges really gained popularity in the sense that gentlemen wanted to get out and go have good camaraderie with their friends and other fellows of the community and network and drink and so forth. But now it's turned into like the differing lodges we spoke about, where you have police lodges and politicians' lodges and so forth. It's become more of a mafioso element to it than anything. And you still have the camaraderie and everything, but that's going to be found more in the small towns, where masonry still takes on a much more valued meaning and is more isolated from the mainstream grip on things from the Supreme Council, because quite honestly, they're really only interested in the cash rich, high population Masonic districts.
So they've got, is it kind of like a Masonic business interest sort of thing? They treat masonry as a business and go out there and get more employees, more assets.
Absolutely. Yes.
So if it's been running a business, is it also based on exponential growth?
That is the intended goal. However, in the past 10, 15 years, they just haven't been able to adapt, and largely because they're unwilling to change on so many issues. Nobody wants to step down. Nobody wants to let new blood in. Nobody wants to adapt new policies and procedures and things like that. So there's a great disconnect between the younger and the older, and the younger just getting fed up and walking away. And then they have whole committees of volunteers who get on the phones and dial these guys and beg them literally to come back, and we'll remit your dues, we'll pick up the tab, just please come back, help out, volunteer, put on degrees, yada yada, and you can't convince them. They're just done. They went and pursued other orders that are studying the metaphysical and not be shunning their members for it and so on. The OTO is a good example of that.
Do you believe that in our society we've been so accustomed to having so much choice? You know, if I want to, I remember I lived on Waiheke Island. Everything shut at 9 o'clock. Okay, so when 9 o'clock came round, there was no midnight munchies down at Macca's or anything like that. So your choices became restricted. But as soon as you move into the main city in Auckland here, suddenly all those things are available to you, and suddenly going out drinking with a bunch of people you don't really care about, who don't really care about you, suddenly it was of little interest to me because I had all these other options. It's a similar effect, isn't it? Hey, if you guys won't give me what I really need, I want the knowledge, I want the experience, I want the mentorship, I want the personal development, and if you ain't going to give it to me, hey, I've got all this choice elsewhere. In a small town, on the other hand, there exists no such choice, does there? Or now with the internet, you don't even have to go in the lodge at all if you want to learn about it all.
No, so much of it is out there, but what they've cleverly done is, on that subject of disinformation, they've put a lot of ritual out there that has clever little parts either omitted or changed around, jumbled up in the verbiage, to where when you go through those degrees, you're actually hearing the correct, you know, verbatim ritual work. And I published that in the back of the book as an appendix, and they're very, very angry that I did. So, which, I mean, anyone, see, they don't tell you this when you're going through the degrees, but all you have to do is, if you're going through your Entered Apprentice and Fellowcraft and Master's degrees, walk into a Barnes & Noble. There's a book with no wording or name or anything on the cover. It's just solid blue. It's interestingly under the category of Jewish history, and you have to get somebody to help you in the store. You'll never find it because it's so little and hidden. But the name of the book is King Solomon and His Followers, and in it is the entire Masonic work from start to finish, correct in its entirety. It is, a lot of it is ciphered. However, the Masonic cipher is extremely easy to figure out. It's just certain symbols, like a little sort of Mercedes hood ornament looking symbol means the letter M, just as an example. So it's fairly easy to figure out. And yeah, the ritual's out there. So, and then of course, once you're a 32nd, you join the Scottish Rite Research Society and Master Craftsman programs. After that, they provide you with a whole wealth of ritual, in-depth study books, thicker than Morals and Dogma, and all the rituals are in there as well. So, but the best, though, Frater X and I agree, is an old one that was decommissioned years and years ago called Richardson's Monitor of Freemasonry. And it's got all the crucial degrees, by invitation only orders like the Red Cross of Constantine, the Holy Grail Council, Knights Templar degree, all those things are in there. And interestingly enough, it's the only text that's ever been put out by the Masons officially, which is why it was decommissioned so quickly, where they actually fess up to and admit to the death of William Morgan in 1826.
Okay. And he was a man who tried to expose Freemasonry back in the day, and this became a huge scandal because there were witnesses who reported that a black Freemasonic coach pulled up beside him in the street and just grabbed him, and he disappeared forever after speaking bad about Freemasons, and it brought a big public eye onto the secret society that hadn't existed before. It had always been kind of generally accepted throughout society. It formed a negative anti-Mason movement, didn't it? A fostering of the beginning.
An independent political party, yes, it did.
Mm. So you think about this. That's how they cover their tracks, is they just, leave things out, right? Or take things out.
Well, they admit in that Richardson's book, they admit to not only bumping him off, but that his body is at Fort Niagara.
Hmm.
So, just like in that book, Your Amazing Mystic Powers, they admit to all the mind control and behavior manipulation research. So,
the question I wanted to ask is, what is the concept of death? What do they have a belief in the afterlife, or do they believe in judgment, or what? What's the?
Yes, they believe that they go to the celestial lodge above in the heavens.
And what do they do there? Do they just have fun with small boys like they normally do down here, or what?
No, he did it.
Yeah, like in D-Malay and all the pedophilia scandals. Ooh, yeah. I guess they believe that it's heaven with special exception to them because they know all the right handshakes. You know, it's pretty silly when you boil it down. So,
do they fear death then, or are they like insane zealots who almost long for it?
Well, technically, the Masonic teachings. Templar especially, if you go that far, teach you to not fear death, that it makes you a more powerful warrior. But based on the men I've dealt with in the order, I would say very much so they fear death. These are men who never want to step down from that precious power and chairs, titles that they have and covet whatever is above that. So... yeah, I would say they fear death.
Well, in ways they just fear change of any kind.
Yeah, whether they're not going to be around to run it. Yeah.
So I wonder if there would be an influence, because we talked about this in shows before about life extension technology, how you can install allegedly some kind of a brain chip or some sort of a device in your body that will regulate your bodily functions, particularly the things like glutathione levels, which allow you to replenish dead and dying cells and what have you. And normally those levels can be produced by the body ad infinitum, but the mind, the brain sends chemicals down to stomp it so that you continue to age. I'm just wondering. Somebody who fears death, who believes in a sex-filled afterlife, I wonder if they'd want to live forever. We'll be right back. Afraid of being braved by the 33rd degree Freemason. No. Right. It's the final segment. We'd love to get some callers in. Apparently everybody's too afraid. 218-339-8520. We're very intimidating, Judge. 218-339-8525 is the number to call in if you want to.
Tell us all about your filthy, nasty Masonic experiences. We will dissect them.
Oh, yeah. We'll dissect them like a frog on a table of a high school science class. With the scalpels and what? And the mothballs. You see, you know, this is funny when I think of mothballs, Freemasonry comes to mind. I don't know why. It's an obscure reference. Maybe it was old and crusty and no longer relevant. we do have a caller now. One way brave enough. Chris in Florida, regular caller, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. I keep running across or bumping into Masons in my daily affairs. And I was at the university, and I was registering for a class. This was a few years back. And this guy had a necklace on. He was like an older black guy. And the necklace kind of slipped out as he was handing me a book or a sheet of paper. I forget what it was. And it had the double-headed eagle with the 32 on it. And I said, oh, where'd you get that? You know, pawn shop? For some reason, I just assumed that it wasn't real. And he said, no, I've been a Mason for 20 years. And there was a lodge behind the school that was a blue lodge. And I had told him that I had, you know, driven by it and seen it, but had never been, you know, offered or asked to go. And he was like, why don't you come down to the big lodge? That's just the blue lodge, you know, it's small. And there's a big one, and you know, he invited me down, and I was like, uh-oh, what do I do? And he said, I've actually been a Mason, you know, for all these years, and, you know, you're missing out. And, you know, he was interested that I knew what I knew, and, you know, like, did I throw out a few facts after I pointed out the necklace? And I was just wondering, I had two questions. Do you have to be invited in? And, is it true that a white Mason can go into any lodge that they want to, but a black Mason cannot go into any lodge that they want to, that they're very racist as well?
Yes, they justify that with the Prince Hall Lodge system as to come across as though they're not racist, when in fact it's the most blatantly racist thing in the 21st century that I'm aware of. As far as being invited, that's a myth because they want it to be a myth because that's part of that whole we don't recruit, and you just described a recruitment process. So what they've done is they've gone ahead and started allowing black gentlemen to petition a white lodge, but anyone who's already a Prince Hall Mason or that still goes and petitions a Prince Hall Lodge now, they're still told, well, sorry, you're what they call a clandestine Mason, which is neither here nor there. Okay, well, to define clandestine Mason by them would mean a improperly made and rogue guy who's trying to subvert the craft, when in fact Prince Hall Masons go through a lot more difficult ritual work than most White Lodges, because they're very devout ritualists. They take it very seriously. They have a lot of self-discipline, and they know their stuff. They really do. And if I were a Prince Hall Mason, that personally, me being the way I am, would infuriate me that I am not allowed to go sit in that Scottish Rite Lodge or in that Grand Lodge of my state or the Blue Lodge down the street from my house. I really think there should be an outcry about that, because there never has been.
Also, can I throw this out to you guys? William Morgan.
Before you do, I kind of wanted to throw in something here just real quickly, Chris. What was it about that that encounter that he had with the Mason that actually made him ripe for recruiting? Was it just because he noticed and knew what the symbol meant? Is that one of the things they look for when they're recruiting?
Yes, the double-headed eagle is the premier Scottish Rite logo.
Okay, yeah, I'm talking about in terms of recruiting, because Chris noticed that it was a double-headed eagle and knew a few things about it. Did that kind of give him the signal that, we could recruit this guy? Whereas if he didn't notice at all, they wouldn't have had that conversation, would they?
As time goes on, they grow more and more desperate. A lot of Masons will now just walk up when they're shaking hands with any male of the species that they're meeting for the first time. They'll kind of slip sort of a half-cocked Masonic handshake just to see if it provokes a response. So, and when you're down in like Texas or the other southern states, you know, a lot of times that will work. So, yeah, they're always on the lookout, always, for another either brother Mason or someone capable of being one.
I can't believe you just said that, because I was taken into the Five Points of Fellowship unknowingly three separate occasions.
Really?
Yes. And when I went,
whoever did that, wow.
Yeah, I know some high level people, and I bump into them on occasion, and I like to give that handshake hug thing. And if you look up the Five Points of Fellowship, you'll notice that it's kind of like what when you go in to hug somebody, and they think you're kind of like, you know, go and shake their, you know, knee to knee, foot to foot, correct me if I'm wrong, shoulder to shoulder, and then they whisper Mahabon.
Yes, basically, that's the password of a Master Mason.
Yeah, so when I went and met Alex Jones, I gave him that handshake to give him the test. He did not whisper Mahabon in my ear.
There's been a video out on YouTube for years from a good friend of mine named Tracy Twyman. Her last name is spelled T-W-Y-M-A-N. And the title of this video is called Signs and Signals of Freemasonry, I believe. It is the most spot-on, accurate depiction of the forms of Freemasonry, including Five Points of Fellowship, that I've ever seen. The only one that is a little bit off is the sign of distress. But okay, it's only off by a little.
All right. Chris, thank you for your call. We're now going to go to Richard in Texas. Richard, you're on the air. We've only got a minute or two for you.
Hi, I'll be quick then. Y'all may have touched on this. I've caught most of the show. But I'm curious about Masonry at the time of Washington and the Founding Fathers. Seems to me, I know y'all have touched on Washington this evening, but seems to me that Washington also railed against the Illuminati and what it was bringing into the world systems and Masonry and that kind of thing. That's probably enough for me to say, and I'll let you tackle that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, Vinny, he did, but then he changed, what was it, 10, 12 years later, he sort of changed his opinion and backed down a little bit on that. He did initially deliver a very harrowing speech with a warning about them. But then toward the end of his presidency, it was sort of like a non-issue to him. So, interesting. Yes. And of course, America, 1776, Bavarian Illuminati, 1776, you know, very interesting year.
Yeah. I want to get a bottle of wine from that year. You know, I hear it was a good year.
A Chateau du Rothschild?
Yeah. I'll get a Shiraz from Chateau du Rothschild, man. That'd be nice, man. 1776 brew. Grown in Bavaria, of course.
Yeah.
Bavarian wine country. All right. Well, we've come to the end of the show. James, you've spent a lot of hours talking with me and of course, an hour earlier before the show today. And, mate, you look real tired. So I'm going to have to let you go. And thank you so much for your time, man.
I am a bit exhausted, yes. Thank you, Vinny. It's always a pleasure. And if anyone wants to check out the book, www.newfalcon.com, category politics, Freemasonry's cult abuses. And you can also find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And please show your support at facebook.com/occupyfreemasonry. I can use all the help I can get.
Facebook.com/OccupyFreemasonry, ladies and gentlemen. And also you can look for, if you Google, I found it's occult abuses and Freemasonry. It actually kind of comes up almost near the top on Amazon. So you can get that book, get to that nice little Facebook page, connect up, help out, just do something. Because if you've got a bunch of criminals, scumbaggery individuals who don't care about you, who are trying to recruit people into some evil, dark, occulted mysticism propagating ancient order to bring about some more scumbaggery. Just understand, one man can't do it alone. You've got to support all those people who are giving it a go anyway. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.